And now I have great honor and pleasure to introduce a friend of all of yours. I think probably almost 90% of the people in this room have worked with him. Larry Gossett on the King County Council. Larry Gossett, who's been a fighter for our neighborhoods and economic justice for the last 30 years. Larry.
I'd also like for you all to join me in recognizing the consistency over the last quarter of a century of progressive, tireless work by Sally Soriano, our moderator. Those of us in this room have a great responsibility and a great opportunity come November 30th, 1999, because it will be our job to lead the effort, because we know the turf and the geography of the greater Seattle community. So these tens of thousands of other progressive-minded people that will be entering our community, we will have to serve as the sergeants of arms. We will have to serve as the guides. We will have to serve as the people that organize places to live. We will have to serve as the openers to the populations throughout our community, because we must do everything we can to prevent the World Trade Organization, which is only 5 years old, from being able to further consolidate its imperialistic effort to take control over the world. Yeah. And I use the word imperialistic because there is no other way that you can really describe what they are doing. This is an imperial set of people that wrote in their constitution, when we're doing our business, the public, the people can't be there. Our doors are not going to be open. Yet their goal is to develop an international constitution that, as it relates to the world economy, will have more power than any individual national constitution. Now, we can't have that happening here in our community. We must stand up and audaciously say that the World Trade Organization is not going to be comfortable here in Seattle, Washington. And I have the responsibility of introducing two brothers that, after you hear them speak, you're going to be more inspired and educated to do the work that we're going to have to do here locally. But I want to reinforce first a point that Sally made a little earlier about what some of us progressive politicians locally are trying to do. And she is right when she said Brian Dardowski has led the effort on the county council to expose the activities of the WTO and the MAI. But this coming Monday, council members Rob McKenna and Chris Vance have put forth a motion that just carte blanche glorifies the World Trade Organization and free trade, and wants us to just accept this resolution carte blanche. So it would be very important if we could fill the county council chambers at 9:30 a.m. on the 10th floor of the county courthouse on 3rd and Jane, for those of you who may not go down there very often. 10th floor, Monday, this coming Monday. 2 days from today, 9:30 a.m., 10th floor, King County Courthouse. We're going to be taking up a motion sponsored by two of the most consistent corporate supporters on the county council. So it'd be good if we use that as a beginning wake-up message for Seattle. Yeah. Our two speakers today have both been very, very active for decades in the progressive movement, not only in the United States, but internationally, that has been going on, particularly as it has related to South Africa. Dennis Brutus was born in Zimbabwe, but he actually grew up in Cape Town and other cities around there. And in 1966, he was exiled from South Africa after almost single-handedly leading a successful sports boycott of South Africa. So let's give him a hand. Now, he was imprisoned, beaten, shot by the South African regime. And then exile. He said, y'all can put my body out of my home country, but you're not going to be able to silence my voice. Yeah. And true to his word, since coming to the United States in 1966, he's been a tireless warrior for reform and significant social change that benefits the majority of the people, not only in the U.S., but in the world community. Our other speaker, Byron Rushing, is a brother who's also been very involved in a variety of community-based and statewide and international movements coming out of Massachusetts, a community into which he moved in the early 1960s. Like myself, he started off as a student organizer in the 1960s, but since 1982, Byron has been the 9th Suffolk District representative in the House of Representatives of Massachusetts. And in that capacity, he led an effort and the Massachusetts legislature to get them to pass legislation to boycott or have the state disinvest in any company doing business in Burma. And much of the ammunition and some of the tools he used successfully in that battle he had learned as an activist who had organized in the anti-apartheid movement in the greater Boston area a decade or two before that. But when they did that, they did not know what the response was going to be. And he's going to be able to specifically tell you and describe for you how the World Trade Organization and its members in Europe, Japan, and the United States has been working the last couple of years to systematically destroy their right as a local elected government to pass international monetary policies that impact corporations. The WTO says, now that our ministers have been meeting for 4 or 5 years, no local government, no national government has the right to violate any of the agreements that we come up with, and they think that, that Massachusetts has done that by boycotting corporations that do business in one of the most anti-democratic countries in our world community, and they must be told, you can't stop the state legislature of Massachusetts from exercising its sovereign responsibilities. So without further ado, I would like to bring to you Byron Rushing, State Representative from the fine state of Massachusetts.
Thank you very much. It is indeed a pleasure to be with you this morning. This is a fantastic group of people here this morning. You are ready. You are ready for a struggle that we all, based on our experience, based on the work that we have done in the past, standing on the shoulders of activists who came before us, know that we can win. Yeah. We can win this struggle. Yeah. Massachusetts passed the Burma Law in 1996. The Massachusetts State Legislature, the people of Massachusetts, have a long tradition of raising up human rights issues domestically and internationally in their city and state governments. I'm not sure when we passed our first legislation in Massachusetts that had something to do with human rights in the world, but I do know that there was a thing called the Boston Tea Party. And I'd be satisfied to start there. But as you know, in the late 1970s and throughout the 1980s, Massachusetts was in the lead in joining the international movement to abolish apartheid in South Africa. It's important to understand that we in Massachusetts did not think, were not arrogant, did not have any hubris to believe that we could stop apartheid in South Africa. But we knew that if we could join up with other progressive forces throughout the world and answer a strategy that had been defined on the ground in South Africa by the ANC and by COSATU and other progressive forces in South Africa, answer their call for international support, then together we would be able to be successful. There were people who told us that it was pie in the sky. They told us we had no chance. As year after year went by, and it seemed that the walls of apartheid were not crumbling, we were told that we should move away from this. We were told that we progressives would not be able to sustain the long haul. But of course we did. We stayed focused, and we won. Now, in Massachusetts, we did two things. We disinvested our pension funds, our state pension funds, from companies doing business in South Africa. And then we decided to put more pressure on corporations by boycotting goods and services so that the state of Massachusetts would not buy goods and services from any corporation that did business in South Africa, whether that was an American corporation or a foreign corporation. Whether that corporation was based in Boston or Massachusetts, we wouldn't buy from them. And we held to that, and that was our contribution to the international movement. So in 1993, when a group of student activists who had just finished a successful boycott against Pepsi-Cola on their campuses at Harvard and Tufts, because Pepsi was in Burma, when they came to me and said, "What can the state do?" I reached into the file and I just pulled out that bill. Yeah. Right? We didn't have to do much work on it. We just took out the word South Africa and wrote in Burma. And we filed the bill. Now, it wasn't easy. It took us 3 years, 93 to 96, to get that legislation passed. Right? But we put that legislation out on the web. It's out on the net. And so there are actually cities who adopted that legislation that we wrote before we adopted it. All right? That was wonderful. It was working. Right? And in 1996, we passed that legislation. And then, 6 months after that legislation was in place, after we had published our Burma list, after we had said what companies could not do business with Massachusetts, we started to hear that the European Union and the Japanese government were going to take our case to the WTO. Now, let me tell you, I knew what WTO stood for, but I did not know on what grounds they could take us to a WTO dispute panel. And so I began a very steep learning curve about the WTO and GATT. And they said that the Massachusetts law was GATT illegal. And what that meant was that the Japanese government and the European Commission of the European Union felt that they had a ground to go to the WTO and call for a dispute panel. And who they were bringing to that dispute panel was not Massachusetts. It was the federal government of the United States of America. We had no standing. It was the federal government of the federal government that had to go and defend Massachusetts' right to have this law. And as you can imagine, all of these negotiations were all going on off to the side, in secret. People would call me up and say, you know, we just had a meeting. Stromberg was just over meeting with the WTO about Massachusetts. And I said, well, no one called me about it. Oh, no, we'll let you know. Now, finally, we were able to get the State Department and the U.S. Trade Office to agree that they would defend the law. And the panel was being established. When? Emboldened by these acts, by these two foreign powers, American corporations decided that even if the WTO won that case, it would not be enough. That this was the opportunity to stop all grassroots activity. To stop all grassroots activity in cities and towns and state legislatures around the country, around human rights, around the world. And they sued Massachusetts, saying that it was unconstitutional what we were doing. And so the Japanese and the Europeans said, oh, never mind, we'll hold off on our panel because the American corporations have a better idea. Right? They are going to stop all active forces around human rights to have any ability to pass laws in cities and towns and states, because they are going to argue that the Massachusetts law is unconstitutional because Massachusetts is doing foreign policy, and foreign policy under our Constitution can only be done by the federal government. And that case is working its way through the federal courts right now. We have not been successful in the federal district court in the First Circuit. That's New England and Puerto Rico. We lost at the district level, we lost at the appellate level, and we are now appealing to the Supreme Court to take this case and resolve this issue, because we are convinced that we are correct on this. And the Attorney General of Massachusetts is appealing this case to the Supreme Court. There are two things right now, before I move on to the issue of the WTO, there are two things that we need your help on. We need the state of Washington to join in the amicus briefs that are being filed to be sent to the Supreme Court to urge the Supreme Court to take this case. We need you to ask your Attorney General to join the amicus brief of the Attorneys General across the country that have joined so far. There are 20 Attorneys General who have joined this. We are trying to get the number of states who have signed on to the amicus brief to get to a point where we equal a majority of the electoral votes that those states would have. All right? And so we need Washington. There is also a separate amicus brief being filed by progressive members of the Congress, our congressional representatives and senators. We need your delegation to sign on to that brief. We ask you to help us in working in those two local moves to help this issue in Massachusetts. Now, finally, I know that many of you have worked on an ordinance to have a selective purchase Burma bill passed in Seattle. Is that correct? All right? And you were not successful. All right? But you were successful because more people know about what's going on in Burma and Seattle now than they did before you started that. All right? And you need to continue that. You need to continue that struggle because right now, everywhere in the United States, you can pass Burma laws except in our federal circuit, in the First Circuit. But here, the Burma law that's in Los Angeles and the Burma law that's in New York City, they are still in force. And we need to tell the American corporations and indirectly tell the Supreme Court that this is policy that we, the people, want to have in America and the ability to do it we want to have in America. And so it's important that you continue that struggle to pass these laws. We were not prepared for this challenge. And we were not prepared for this challenge because all through the anti-apartheid movement, we had never had such a challenge. And we had never had such a challenge from the WTO because, of course, the WTO did not exist. In between the anti-apartheid movement and the time that the Burma law was passed, the Uruguay talks took place. And in the Uruguay round, you had the establishment of the WTO and the dispute process that now exists. The ability of countries to challenge other countries' laws because those laws are what they call GATT illegal or WTO illegal is now a reality. And we are seeing it in action. We are seeing it occur. And none of us had any ability to participate in the creation of those rules. Those rules were created in secret. And those rules are carried out in secret. The panels that have been established do not have to publicly open their records to everyone. There is no transparency in the WTO. And so we have to, using these examples of what has occurred over the past 4 years, take a hard look at the WTO. We have to, using these examples, educate our fellow citizens about what is happening internationally by the organization of corporations across the globe. Corporations across the globe organizing against people across the globe. What happened in Massachusetts, of course, has been duplicated over and over and over again in many, many, many cases. And you'll hear more about those cases this morning. You'll hear more about those cases this morning. Let me just put this in a larger context, because what we are doing is crucial to the history of human rights and democracy, crucial to the future of human rights and democracy in our world. We who are Americans forget that when this nation was founded, when the United States Constitution was adopted, it was adopted after a grand compromise. A grand compromise. There were revolutionaries at the beginning of this nation who believed that the issue was the empowerment of human beings, that human beings had to be granted liberty, that human beings had rights, that human beings were supreme. But at the same time, there were people involved in that same struggle who were involved in that struggle because they wanted more control over property. They wanted control over property, and they wanted property to be supreme. And our Constitution is a compromise of those two ideologies. And the time has come when we must end that compromise. Afraid to use the words of Thomas Jefferson. I don't care who he slept with. The issue is, he said, all people, all men and women are created equal. Right. And once those words went out of his mouth, they cannot come back. Yeah. They are out there. And so, clearly, as part of that compromise, we originally said that the only people who could vote in the United States were white males who owned property. But it did not take long before white males who did not own property revolted so that they too could have the vote. It did not take long before black people said, oh, we're in that we the people too. Put my initials next to we the people. And then women said, oh, we're in that we the people too. Put my initials next to that we the people. Now that struggle took years. That struggle took bloodshed. That struggle took organizing. Right? But the issue of who was supreme, human beings or property, continued. And we are at a point where we must say, an end to that compromise. That the people who are for property supreme, right, have decided to break out of that compromise. They have decided that they will attempt in every way possible to make property supreme. And our task in our work in Burma, as in our work in South Africa, our task in our work to stop the WTO is part of this larger struggle that is essential as we move into the next century. And it is the struggle of saying that men, women, girls, boys are supreme.
Thank you very much, Byron.